Hello, AFE subscribers. My name is Devang Desai. Introducing an interview I did with Nashville SC defender and Canadian national team member Alistair Johnston ahead of what is going to be a massive week for Canada. We chatted everything about Canada and the setup and John Herdman and what's it been like to play for him, as well as Alistair's time with Nashville with an Eastern Conference team that's making waves. Plus, we talk about Alistair Johnston's roots in League One Ontario and in Aurora and how he came up to be one of the key players for Canada going forward. It's a fun chat. It's an illuminating chat. I hope you enjoy it because I did. Very, very lucky to be joined this week by Nashville SC defender and member of the Canadian men's national team, Alistair Johnston. How's it going?
Thanks for having me, guys. It's going really well. Can't complain at all. And, exciting times for both Nashville SC and the Canadian men's national team. So we have a busy couple of months coming up. So no complaints over here.
I was going to say, I feel very fortunate to catch you now, sir, because I feel like you're riding extremely high with a really good Nashville team that I think is now firmly in the conversation in the East. And I think I wanted to start there just in terms of, it's a young club. We know it's a recent expansion franchise, but you start last year, obviously COVID hits everyone, but then we get to MLS's back and Nashville's dealt a second blow in terms of not being able to play those games. But you guys managed to regroup from that, get everything together, and then make a playoff run in where you beat TFC. I know a club close to your heart as well, but I wanted to ask you, like, how was that introduction to professional life? Because I have to imagine it was pretty challenging.
It was quite insane, to be honest. It was funny when we go around the locker room and all the older guys are like, man, they kind of felt bad for us. Like, this is not what a rookie year is supposed to be like. but they also think that we got out of some things in terms of rookie duties just due to social distancing. So they were like, you're lucky on that end. So it was a little funny like that. But to be honest, it felt like one long preseason. It was crazy. It felt like we'd just gotten fit. Finally had kind of figured out what our roster was looking like. We were all excited to get through that first 8 weeks of hard running and really kind of, you know, going over the basic things, especially being an expansion team. You know, everyone was new. You're not the only new guy being a rookie. Everyone on that team from top to bottom was new. So going over all of that, and then obviously we just began the season and then COVID hit. So we took some time off there. And then we got back pretty quick, though, into doing some individual sessions, some small group stuff. But that was a lot of fitness again, just getting all ready for that. And then finally got to the MLS's back tournament. We were hyped to go to that, real excited. We got down there and then COVID hit us pretty bad. And we were trapped in our rooms for 2 weeks down there in Orlando. And then you know what happens then is, as soon as you get back, you got to do pretty much a preseason again to get the fitness back. So it was a long grind those first 6 months or so of 2020, but you know, it was all worth it in the end once I got out there and was able to play. But it was a pretty crazy inaugural season for the club, just being in the MLS and being able to share it with our fans, which was a nice thing. By the end of the season, being able to get people into the games at Nashville, which was nice. But tell you what, this organization has been top class from top to bottom so far. And you know, it's been a great city to be a part of, and just love representing this city for sure.
So definitely a challenging year, and I'm not saying anyone really has a blueprint for any of this stuff because we're all kind of learning on the fly. But I got to say, for Nashville's sake, in terms of adapting to the league and kind of getting it together after all those things you just mentioned, I think having Gary Smith in the fold has been pretty fortunate for the club. I wanted to ask you, like, personally, Gary Smith has been around. He's kind of done it all. What has he been for you as a player?
He's been a great first coach, I think, for me to have when you go into the league. I think you want someone that kind of fits your style as well. And me being a defender and him being, a lot of people would say, a bit more of a defensive-minded coach, but me also having a British background and kind of understanding that lingo and all that stuff definitely helped. I know some of the other more American rookies struggled a little bit more than I did necessarily, just because I've kind of grown up in that environment where, you know, we're used to that the English kind of way to a degree. So no, he's been great for me, and it took a while for me to earn his trust, but that's exactly what you expect at this level, you know, and nothing's going to be handed out. Nothing's going to be given. And I think that it's really worked out well for me, because once I did gain his trust, he's been a guy that, you know, he really values that in players, that when he can count on you, he will count on you. Doesn't really matter your age at that point. But getting over that first hurdle was definitely difficult. But, you know, that's what that was to be expected, you know, coming into the pro environment out of college. So he's been a great coach for me, and he's really taught me a lot in terms of how important it is to defend as a unit, and just being completely mentally tuned in. And most importantly, it's just what it is to be a pro, you know. Once you take that next step up, you know, what it really value in terms of not just taking care of your body, because that's always something that I've been really good at, but just you can't have 1 minute off. If you play 89 great minutes, but one bad minute, that's not acceptable anymore. Especially when we were an expansion franchise, when we knew, you know, if we were going to be in games, especially that first year, is that we're probably going to have to keep a clean sheet or maybe concede one, you know, to be lucky to get out of there with 3 points. So that was a big thing for us, is especially as defenders, is, hey, we can't afford to have a bad game, because we have a bad game and it's not going to end for us. So just being mentally tuned in, I think, is something he really drilled into me, which has been great. And I think the Canadian men's national team, it's something that I've tried to bring there as well. And John Herdman's been a big fan of that for sure.
Well, it's funny because, like, I feel like doing some research, you made the move to right back at school at Wake, but I feel like for Nashville, you are predominantly a right wing back. And I think there are some similarities to how you're being used for Canada as well. But like, how have you found that kind of transition as well positionally?
Yeah, so I started as a center mid, and I played as a center mid until my senior year actually in college, when I got moved to right back. And it was kind of a freeing moment, honestly. I was a solid center mid, but I was never going to be anything that was going to be, you know, MLS teams eyeing up. So moving to the right back was a great choice. Fit my style and my physical traits really well. So yeah, that first year at Nashville, we played a really solid back four. And it was something that, you know, it's something that Gary had always kind of tended to play throughout his time in the league. But he'd also been known to switch to a five at the back or a three center back kind of formation, depending on who we were lining up against. And as this year went on, we had some injuries. Obviously, then some guys were missing through Gold Cups and stuff like that. Walker Zimmerman being a big name for that. And when you do lose a guy as pivotal as Walker is to our back line, you know, sometimes we do need to switch things up tactically. And a lot of the time that meant going to a back three. And it was something that he had tested out before. And honestly, it fit a lot of our kind of our player profiles to a degree that, you know, we went out there, we rolled with it, and it worked. So it's been one of those ones, whether it's playing in a back four or playing in a back three, I feel really comfortable with. And I can kind of lean on my time as a center mid actually when I play in that back three, because if I'm a right wing back, it's pretty much right back, but with a green light, which is a lot of fun for me offensively. But if I'm playing as a right side center back in the back three, it kind of feels like I get to quarterback it a bit. I'm a bit more central, and, you know, I can really find those passes that I'm used to, that I was doing my entire life playing as a deep lying central midfielder. So it's kind of been a nice balance for me. And I feel really comfortable whether I'm in a right back in a back four, or as a wing back in a back five, or as that outside center back in a back five. So, you know, it again, it's one of those things that I think it's great as a young player to just be able to, you know, go out there and just kind of get thrown into the fire with those formations and those different tactical positions. You got to learn on the fly, and really kind of this is the big development years, I think, especially being in a locker room with guys like Dax McCarty and these old guys that have been around the block and know a thing or two for sure within the league, and have seen young players, how they develop and playing different positions. And all these guys have given me great pointers in terms of what I need to do with whatever position I'm playing. And, you know, I'm just trying to soak it all in and really develop as a player, because at the end of the day, if I can show that I can play right back, right wing back, right side center back, it only helps keeping me on the field. So I'm all for that.
Two things. Versatility is always a huge asset. And secondly, I hope you don't call Dax and those guys old guys to their face constantly.
you know, I can call Dax sometimes. Old to his face. He just got awarded his 400 cap special commemorative jersey this morning in training. So he knows he's getting up there now. So he has no problems with me calling him old.
Coming off a tight draw against Orlando, I think we can all agree a very solid team in the East. And generally, yeah, I think Nashville is in this tier a bit below New England, who I think is having a stormer. But there's Orlando, Philly, Nashville, New York City. It's funny, you mentioned last year, and the defensive solidity was something you could hang your hat on. But I think this year, every time I turn on a Nashville game, I'm seeing a potential goal of the year candidate, whether it be Hadi Mukhtar or CJ or Alex. I feel like this is a bi-community kind of drive here. Is this a tactical thing from Gary and crew, or is this also guys kind of finding a different level individually and becoming those kind of scorers you needed last year?
You know, I think it's something that they've always had within themselves. You know, Mike Jacobs did a great job putting this team together, and he went out and got the players that he wanted. And I think that it takes time to adapt to this league. And it's the same with any league around the world. When you come over from a foreign country and this is your first time living in America and you're going through a pandemic, it is difficult, you know, to really find your feet. And I think that now we've kind of, we have that structure and we have that, you know, that chemistry that's been built up over the year. Over the past 18 months now, you could say, where those guys are really, truly starting to blossom. I mean, Hany Mukhtar has always had that skill. It's not like he just, you know, switch was flipped. It's just been, you know, he feels a little more comfortable. I think he's been fitter this year in terms of not having any little nagging injuries. And then also the addition of CJ Sapong has been night and day. I mean, he's just, he provides such a presence up there. And then again, just a guy that has been in this league and has scored in this league and understands how this league works. I think that's really invaluable. And I think around the field, you can see that a lot of the guys on our team have that, from Dax to Lovitz, Romney, Zimmerman. I mean, a lot of these, Godoy, are great examples of guys that are in that upper kind of echelon, but might be overlooked a little bit because they didn't necessarily play overseas or something like that, or had that really big name in terms of a huge price tag or anything. But they're guys that have been in this league for around the decade mark, each of them, and have been really solid contributors wherever they've been. So I think that's been a big thing. So yeah, just adding a guy like CJ Sapong has also helped definitely, you know, just unlock some things for Randall Leal and Hany Mukhtar up there and all those attacking players. So it's been a real joy to watch. I mean, us as defenders, you know, we're just, how can we get the ball to you as quick as possible put you guys in position to succeed. So that's kind of our job as a back line, but no, it's been a ton of fun playing with them this year for sure.
I think Danny Lovitz is probably one of the best examples of someone just working incredibly. I was with TFC when we picked him in the draft, and it was not a sure thing at all. It's like, sure, you come to camp and we'll see how things go, but he made himself undroppable. And then now you see what he's doing with Nashville and with the US national team. It's awesome. It's awesome to see. All right. That's the Nashville story, Alistair, but I know a lot of fans of our show are very excited for what's coming in September. It's been a long time coming. I was reading a quote from you. I think this is after maybe the Bermuda game or the Cayman Islands game, but you were saying, I was born in 98. I have never experienced something like this. And I think for me, who's 10 years older, I'm also like, holy crow, I have never seen anything like this either. What was it like in Chicago after that second leg against Haiti? Because I think a lot of us watching from home felt this catharsis about being able to witness something we haven't been able to see ever. But what was it like there for you guys?
You know, when I look back on that one, it's an interesting one, because I think when I looked around and I saw how emotional and how big of a thing it meant to the older guys, it kind of really put into perspective for us young guys what this truly means. Because I think when you go around to the younger guys like myself, Kamal Miller, and then obviously guys like Alfonso Davies, Jonathan David, these kind of guys, we went into that game like, yeah, no, we're expected to win this. And that's kind of, since I've been in the program, we've been a very solid team, you know? But before that, I think for the guys like Milan Borjan and Jonathan Osorio, the guys who have seen some trials and tribulations, you know, have been through some really tough moments as well with this program. And in order to just kind of see it coming out with that little bit of the light at the end of the tunnel, I guess you could say, to a degree, for those guys, it really kind of put into perspective like, wow, like, you know, we really are creating history here. But for us young guys, it was like, hey, like this kind of isn't our ceiling. Like we feel like we have so much more to accomplish, and so much more to show the world we're able to do. So it was a really cool moment in that sense that it was like, yeah, we did that. But man, like when we go home, like, this is going to be a really big thing. You know, this is kind of even bigger than what we can truly grasp our minds around. So, you know, I think when I originally went in, it was, my idea was always going to be like, okay, you know, 2022 it's going to be, you know, that's going to be really tough, but 2026 is what we're kind of building towards. But as soon as I got in there and we realized how talented this group was, it's like, no, we're not waiting for 2026. Like 2022 is a real thing, and we're going to be really disappointed if we don't make it there. So I think that's been a really cool moment within the group, is just realizing like, no, this isn't something that's far-fetched. It's there for the team if we want it. And, you know, it's going to be a tough 7 months, but that's CONCACAF. You know, nothing that you really want that bad is going to come easy. So it's something that everyone I know in the group is super excited for, and I could just feel the energy. It was great after those ones, after the Gold Cup, we went up and played in Toronto. You could just feel the energy within the crowd, and even they were cheering me on a little bit. It's like, okay, this is cool. You know,
it's hard, man. It's hard.
Yeah, you know, I'm getting a little bit of love now.
Tejan came and we're like, he scored, got to cheer. We got to cheer it, man. He's doing well. Yeah. He's doing well. It's just, I mean, still to this day, it's pretty exceptional. And like you said, work to do. And we talked about Gary, but I think John Herdman, we know well as Canada fans from his work with the women's team, helping them lead the way to a gold medal that we just witnessed in Tokyo. But yeah, I think John's man management is something that we hear about a lot. What's your relationship with him been like?
He is, he's the ultimate man manager. I'll tell you what, the best part of perspective, whenever I come back to Nashville after, Steve Guppy, my assistant, always pulls me over and he goes, "Nate, whenever you come back from Canada, you always just seem more confident in the ball and more sure of yourself. I'm not sure what it is going on over there, but you always do." And that's just, it's strictly down to that coaching staff at Canada. I'll tell you what, they are the best at instilling confidence in you. And making you feel like you belong and that you can, you know, create history and reach that next level and really, you know, reach that untapped potential that you weren't even sure you really had. And John's been unbelievable at that, with just in terms of, his man management, understanding each player, what they need. Some guys need a little more tough love. Some guys need that kick up the butt, you know, but other guys need a little bit of, you know, a little cozy up. I've never been one that's needed that, but at the same time, you know, he's just so good at kind of pushing the right buttons on every single person that, you know, I can do better and I want to do better. And he's just been the perfect coach, I think, to lead this program with the current crop of players that's coming through. Everyone's so bought into everything that he's putting out for us. So, you know, it is a really exciting time, I think, for Canadian players and Canadian fans. I think watching this team, it's a team that's quite enjoyable to watch. And you can kind of feel that sense of camaraderie that, you know, he has everyone in there bought in to play for the badge. No one's there just because it's an extended vacation or, you know, whatever it is. It's everyone's there because we want to represent Canada and we want to win. And I think that's something that he's really instilled with this culture that he's brought in. And it's something you saw with the Canadian Women's National when he was there, and they've continued to carry that legacy on. I mean, look what they just completed. An unbelievable journey in the past month. It's kind of captivated all the Canadian soccer players across the country, girls and boys. So, you know, I think he was a big foundational piece in that too. So, you know, that's something that us in the men's program look at and go, why not us as well? So he's been a big part, and I really just enjoy playing for him, and he's done a great job at, you know, really setting that culture at what it needs to be a winning national team.
Do you know what he's listening to in that headphone he's got in? Is it like a spotter or something? Or,
you know, it's funny. He originally started with the white AirPod, and then he got like a tan colored one, I think, to kind of blend into his skin tone.
Spy,
and
it's spy stuff.
You know, I've never asked it, but I'm guessing he's got some. He might have our tactical guy up in the stands watching, feeding him some numbers, saying, "Oh no, Alistair's pass completion is just dropped below 90%. You gotta have a word with him." Probably something like that.
I wanted to, and you can't pick a Canadian player because we're going in the octagon. But who do you reckon is the best player in CONCACAF going right now? No Canadians included, because I think we got some options. But can you choose one?
That's going to be it's a tough one. I mean, it's hard to go against Fonzie or Joe David, but I won't pick Canadian, even though Tejan's been on fire too. you know, I haven't gone up against Pulisic yet, but from what I've heard from all the guys, that he is that next level player. So I'm excited for that matchup. I was bummed that Chucky Lozano got hurt in the Gold Cup and had to pull out, because that was one that I was kind of really eyeing up with being a really good matchup. But, you know, the one that I'm probably most intrigued about seeing, being a huge Premier League fan, is probably going to be Mikel Antonio for Jamaica. I want to see this up close and personal. The power, the strength, the technical ability. He is a handful and a half for any defender. So I am curious to see him and Leon Bailey, how they connect for Jamaica. So in terms of top-end talent, I think Pulisic probably is it, if you're not looking at Canada, him or Chucky Lozano. But I'm most intrigued to go against Mikel Antonio, I'd say.
I'm sad my co-host David Goss is not here because he'd love that answer. He's a Mikhail Antonio stan.
Is he? Okay.
Super Jack for September 2nd. You can have friends and family there, hopefully.
That's the plan. You know, it's a pretty cool window for me going, playing in Toronto, where I grew up, and then coming back down to play in Nashville, where I play club, and then going back up to play Toronto. So this is the best window for me in terms of just having people out there for the game. So it should be a pretty packed crowd of Johnstons and other friends and family. So we'll see. But it will be interesting playing in Nashville too. I'm excited for that one against the U.S.
And that's right.
Really getting booed in my hometown right now. So that'll be a fun one too. So, I mean, all the games, I mean, I've talked to some of the guys who've gone through it on my Nashville team, just through with their clubs, and they've just been talking about how each place is. There's not going to be a single easy game. Every single place, whether you're playing U.S. or Mexico, obviously, just those are the top dogs in CONCACAF, as they have been for the past little while in terms of the quality on the pitch. And then you go to a place like Jamaica where the grass is 6 inches long, or you go to El Salvador where you have to fly, you're flying in on a horizontally just to land the airplane, you know. So there's going to be some funny ones. Honduras, when they're going to be pulling the fire alarms and setting off firecrackers. So, you know, I'm looking forward to all those games. And, you know, that's something that I don't think a lot of European kind of fans understand about the CONCACAF. They'd probably say, like, yeah, US, Mexico should qualify every time, but they don't really understand the grueling travel and just how difficult some of the places you have to go to play are. I mean, just going to play in Haiti, some people would look at that and go, oh, it was only a 1-0 win or whatever it was down there. But my goodness, that was an insane trip. It was eye-opening for all of us on the team, going to a third world country, which was in just such disarray. And it was really tough to see. And then going playing on turf in 40 degree temperatures was insane as well. So, you know, like, there's a lot of places in CONCACAF that are just super difficult to play, super difficult environments, but that's what makes this confederation so much fun to play in.
You mentioned the Gold Cup. It might be impossible to answer this question because it was maybe one of the most captivating games I've ever seen as a fan. But I'm talking about that loss against Mexico and Houston.
Yeah.
Can you take one single thing away from that match as you walk away? Like, what will stick with you the most? Because I think between the handbags and like the wildness of everything going on, you saw a Canadian team that kind of grew up before us, right? And I think this was one of those seminal moments.
I think the biggest thing I took away from that game is, I wouldn't necessarily say it was fear, but there was a respect in the Mexican players' eyes and the fans and Tata Martino's eyes that he kind of came in. You can kind of sense that they came in here thinking, all right, yeah, Canada, we've seen this one before. Score an early one, we'll roll over these guys pretty good. But they didn't understand that not only do we have talent, but we also have that fighting desire now, which you might not have seen before. You know, that we are willing to stand up to the CONCACAF bullies to a degree. You know, we're not going to go without a fight. It didn't matter if we were playing in front of 70,000 Mexicans or not. You know, we were going to stand our ground and we weren't going to give over. So I think that was a really cool moment. It's just seeing like, and you could sense it on the field. They were like, okay, these guys aren't what we expected. These guys can play.
It's different. It now.
Is different. Yeah. This isn't the Canada we're used to. And then you look at it and that's us playing without. I mean, you looked at the injuries and the guys who weren't there, you know, Mexico, all of a sudden you could tell they were like, okay, this is a different cat now. This isn't the same Canada we were used to. So I think that was probably the coolest moment. It's just sensing that kind of that respect now that we gained just from that performance. And obviously we were bummed not to advance there. I thought we had a great chance. But also that feeling when we walked off the field that, you know, we belonged out there. It wasn't something that it was too big of a moment or anything like that. It was a young group of Canadian men who showed that they belonged. And I think that's something that, you know, we could hold our chins high about. And you know, that's got us all the more fueled up for these games that start in September.
I think I could talk to you for a few hours, but I know you've got things to do. So I wanted to close on a couple of things even more local, but you play with Von Azzurri, League One Darlings, a program that's produced quite a few players. You mentioned Kamal Miller. If you're watching the CPL, Austin Ricci, Ryan Telfer, there's a lot of Dane St. Clair. The list goes on. And now we have the CPL, obviously, here now, Alistair, and this new pathway for Canadian professionals. I know League One was important for you, and it helped you kind of go forward and go into school. But with the CPL now mm-hmm. existing, do you see this as an even better chance for players to get eyeballs on them? Because I think at the end of the day, you're not going to be exposed or seen if no one's watching. And I think this league, one of the many things they can do is produce more environments for people to be seen.
Yeah, I think it's exactly that. You know, when you look around at all the big footballing countries, there's something they all have in common is they have a really strong league attached to them. And I think that's something that for us to take that next step as a footballing country is that we needed to have our own league where Canadian talent was getting the chance to play at a younger age and showcased on the professional level. And I think that was what was great about League One is that because we didn't have the CPL, a lot of guys who should be playing pro or should be playing at that higher level were forced to play in this league. So me coming through as a 15, 16-year-old and getting to play against men who should be making real money playing pro soccer from that age on was unbelievable. And you know, it also, I think it's just as big for the coaches as it is for the players, is that getting that coaching, the Canadian coaching to that next level is going to be super important. And the only way to do that is to put them into pro environments and let them work with guys full time. So this is another thing with the League One is without CPL, a lot of those coaches were coaching in League One. You look right at Forge and obviously York Nine. And I think that was kind of the best thing that I got lucky with is that at Vaughan Azzurri is that we had such amazing coaches that I was able to work with from the years from age 15 and onwards, from Carmazacco and Patrice Geyser. It was unbelievable the knowledge of the game and the connections they had within Canadian soccer and turned out with American schools too, which helped me get down there and you know, get my education and also grow as a man and grow as a player. So I think that, yeah, if I came through a couple years later with the CPL thing, it would have been a different story. I think it's only going to help these young players again. Yeah, just getting that exposure and that opportunity to play in a pro environment from a younger age and truly understand what it means to be a pro and how to grow as a player and as an individual at that age is going to be massive. And I'm just really excited to see where this league goes. You know, I think mm-hmm. it's got a great upward trajectory. And I think when you look around the world again, is the leagues that have the best coaches will attract the best players. And it's time for us to really start promoting Canadian coaches and giving them the opportunity to. And that'll really take us to the next level. Because once you get that kind of set up and then we really get the academies going, I think it's going to be just a breeding ground for professional footballers that will find their way into the MLS or the CPL or even overseas and playing in massive matches for the Canadian men's national team. And I think that is just, we're now really getting into the building blocks of what it takes to become a footballing nation. And I think everyone should be excited by that.
Hook it to my veins, man. I can run through a wall right now. All right. Last one. I believe you worked with friend of the show, Clayton Hansler, on a Super Draft preview a few years back about mm-hmm. your artwork. And I wanted to ask you what you're working on right now.
Right now, it was supposed to be a gift for my mom, which is coming up soon. Her birthday is a couple months away, but I started early on a drawing of me and my brothers when we were younger. I was in a soccer jersey of Morris Singers to represent.
Of course.
Funny when we got back from camp and I'm drawing all three of us. So I'm going to send that one out to mom, hopefully, in the next couple of weeks. So it'll get there in time for her birthday.
As a Richmond Hiller, I know that club well, sir. So shouts to Aurora.
Yes, you do.
Thanks so much, Alistair. This was a blast. Best of luck with Nashville. And of course, best of luck with the Canadian team.
Thank you, guys. Appreciate it.